We're in chapter 4. James, has been moving along since he definitely in the middle of chapter 2 when it started talking about the faith in works, and then the sense of the tongue, and then last week this aspect about wisdom, true wisdom, and especially, all of that, these addressing things surely are because of issues in the church where there's varying opinions or there's some thing going on. The faith and works, could just be different people teaching different things or just the aspects of life. When it gets in the tongue, we clearly saw from the early part of it where it talks about few teach, that there had to be some connection with the tongue, not just saying in that very appropriate sense, and it, definitely is an application and maybe even a focus, toward the end, but a misuse of the tongue in terms of what we might call foul language, things like that. That's not to say that's excluded here, but it includes more than that. It was in the sense of, it was tied to that, aspect of let few be teacher. But then it definitely moves into that sense of, out of the same well, you don't get sweet water and bitter water. So why should the same, person curse God and, bless God and curse man? That doesn't work in the rest of nature. Why should it work with us, though? Unfortunately, there's that aspect that we see it in people. Then it moves, as we were looking at last week about the sense of wisdom, and that there's a wisdom from above and a wisdom from below, and the kind of this horizontal wisdom, has a lot of pragmatic to it. It's a self-proclaimed wisdom that's advancing oneself, and all of that, all those kinds of things there, clearly had this, I don't know if clearly, but has this background that there's some conflict. People are boasting, people are doing this, people are doing that, there's some of this stuff going on, and that's why he's addressing it. And so when he moves into chapter 4, well, really in that, the end of chapter 3, verse 17 says, "But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." And just that by itself, given a summary, sure, you're not surprised when the next part moves in about conflict, because the very wording he's used is, put it on the one side, these are the things that would keep one out of conflict. These are the things that lead to peace. Well, why are you saying it leads to peace? Well, because there's some things that are disturbing peace there. And so it begins with two questions here that show or surface this, the source of conflict. He says, "What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you?" If you were to look at a group that has conflicts, and you were to say, "What is the source of the conflicts?" You're going to get a lot of finger pointing. "Well, he did this. She said this." You're going to have everybody saying, Wynn says it had to be Rob no matter what. and Wynn would probably be right in this situation. There's always, we're going to go there, but James, he says, "Is not the source of your pleasures that wage war in your members?" Saying, where does this originate? Well, so where do they originate? Who bears the responsibility? There was a song in the 70s I don't know that I actually, I don't really know if I ever heard this song. If I did, it's been so long ago, I can't remember it. But it's kind of intriguing. He says, I saw a man on my TV. He said, I wish I could be free. But I am a victim of my past, and he believed it till the last. Did he jump or was he pushed? I saw Adam in the garden, wondering, should he be or should he not? He reached out and took that fruit. Did he jump or was he pushed? I saw Hitler in his bunker. Blood and pain were all around. What made him cause the fear and hatred? What made him drag his people down? Did he jump or was he pushed? You know, it's, there is that aspect of, you know, what's the cause? Going back even, you know, further than this, or maybe if this was the very early 70s, there was that, I think it was Laugh-In. You remember that show Laugh-In? If you're old enough, you know, Rob and Wynn aren't that old. And I think it was on that one. There was, they were always going along, and I can't even remember who that guy was doing it now, but, it, you know, everything was, the devil made me do it. Yeah, that's right. He was the one. And it was the devil made me do it. The devil made me do it. Flip Wilson. And, what's the cause? We're very prone to blame others. There's a, Calvin and Hobbes is definitely a paraphrase of it, but Calvin is asking, he says, do you believe there is a personal devil that makes people, or causes people to do bad things? And Hobbes says, no, I think people are, I think humans are, I forgot how he words it. I think humans can get in enough trouble by themselves or something. It's not to say there's not a devil. There's not to say that there's not a spiritual warfare. The Bible is very clear about that. But it's very easy to jump out and everything's blaming someone else. And so here, it goes another way. The idea of quarrels here is literally it's talked about an armed conflict. Well, I don't think he's talking about an armed conflict here. But is that sense of strife, conflict, quarrels. Conflicts, it's only in, as here in the plural, and it would be, it's in that sense of battles that are fought without actual weapons. So it's fighting, quarrels, strife, disputes, and it's used several times in the New Testament, 4 or 5 at least. So basically become, synonyms for, personal conflicts. Not necessarily talking about fist fights, but the arguments, even the silent arguments that go on. I remember reading a story about these, I think it was two brothers in a church. And one always sat on one side and one always sat on the other side, and they went out opposite doors and they wouldn't talk to each other. Those kinds of sense of conflicts. He says, is not the source of your pleasures that wage war in your members? So the very nature of this question calls for an affirmative answer. Yes, that's it. Even though, people wouldn't want to say that, but yeah, that's it. Source indicates, the reason or the source of this. D.L. Moody was once asked, and D.L. Moody was, this evangelist, founder of Moody Bible Church, said, what would you do if members in your congregation are at swords' points with each other and would not make up? Moody responded, I should keep after them until they did make up or left the church. And he continued, no blessing can be expected to come to a church as long as those members go to the Lord's Supper and have an open quarrel. I believe the reason there are so few conversions in many churches is because of these church feuds. God isn't going to bless a church in that condition. When the church lives in the power of the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, I am sure that many will be added daily to the flock of God. I definitely see some of the evangelistic aspects in his attitudes there. But the first part of what he's saying is, is beyond being opinion. When you look at the in Corinthians, when it's talking about the Lord's Supper, and Paul talks about examining yourself, and that's the reason some have been ill or sick, and there's definitely, you know, talking about a you know, the spiritual consequences in their life. You know, when you look at the overall context, it doesn't seem likely that the focus is examine your life for your own personal sin. Now, that's not a bad application, and would be an appropriate thing to do. But the context is earlier about is a conflict. And I think that would be the primary focus there, that when, you know, when you come to the Lord's table, there should be that examining. You know, is there kind of, you know, this is supposed to be something that's unifying the church. This is supposed to be, you know, the picture of the Lord's Supper is that there is the body of Christ, and so Moody is, you know, there he's talking about, that's what he's talking about. You've got this open quarrel. There's no place for that. How can you be doing having communion? It's a violation of the very picture of it. And so what's the source of quarrels? Well, it's, you know, now I think, you know, before we go too far, you know, is it, you know, the Bible does tell us, Paul, and you know, to be at peace with others, you know, as far as you can. I mean, there is a point where you cannot reconcile something because the other party will not reconcile. And so that, you know, that's definitely there. But that's, you know, here he's not, that's not his focus. His focus is that you've got these warring factions here. And he moves from that and he asks, you know, some things here. He says, and so there's really two sequences that show the practices here. He says, you lust and do not have, so you commit murder. Well, murder is pretty strong here. Lust. You know, pretty much in English right now, when we hear the word lust, becomes not the best word to communicate, because lust, you know, has those sexual connotations. But lust, really, the word is desire, and when it's used in a pot, and it's neutral. I mean, the word by itself, it depends on the context. If the context is using it positively, then it's in that sense of a positive desire. If it's used negatively, it's a negative desire, and that's what it is here. And so the context is showing it. So New American Standard says lust. I'm sure other translations have something different because of the sexual connotations we might read into it. Murder would be back to that aspect that Jesus used of it. That, you know, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount was able to take Scripture and say, you know, if you're only looking at it in a very rigid sense, then you know there are certain aspects you might be able to say, I don't violate the Ten Commandments. And so if you say, well, I've never murdered anybody, but Jesus saying, you know, it wasn't ever intended to be in that isolation, that it has a broader context of do you hate. And so that would be the usage definitely that James is bringing here. You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. The second sequence, you're envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. And so you see that other aspect there of you know, almost these are parallel. You know, you lust, you desire something, and so you fall into hate, or you desire something, and you're jealous for it, and you can't obtain it, and so you end up fighting and quarreling, and so you end up with a, you know, very parallel kinds of things, and, you know, unfortunately, that's where so much in church conflicts come down to, is it's just this sense of, you know, I want something, whatever it is, my way. I've probably said this somewhere before, but a church in Dallas that had split. Some research was done in it to find the source of these conflicts of some of these churches. And this one church, they went back to find the original thing, which, I mean, in one sense, I don't know if you could ever say that's original, because obviously there were some problems for this to become the issue. But the, you know, kind of that kernel that brought things out was at a church dinner, and one of the elders, or, you know, whatever they were using as church officers, I think it's a Presbyterian church, but it would have been an elder, was behind a younger person or boy or something that got a bigger cut of meat than he did. And that started. Another church, when they did this, it came down to a vote on the color of the carpet in the church. And, you know, you look at that, and that becomes these petty things at times, you know. Desire. Envious. And you know, I never understood the conflicts in South Dakota. I mean, I did in some level, in some ways, but a lot of it I didn't understand. But they clearly fell into these categories of things aren't the way I want them. I mean, when you come right down to it, it's things aren't the way I want it. You know, this isn't the way I want it. That's not going the way I want it. I wished it was this way. I wished it was that way. And it's not that we should never express our opinions, or we should not ever have a place to, you know, express our preferences. But if we never recognize that this is, if it's not kept in check and it's not kept in a recognition, these are preferences, this is, you know, whatever, you convince yourself of something more. The Mark McGuire apology, if you would, or confession, whatever it was, if you followed any of that, is intriguing, you know, for a couple of reasons. Intriguing in the timing, you know, what was the purpose of it? I mean, having, you know, he says that it's been on his chest for 5 years, you know, well, so why now? Still intriguing, you know, when it happened, so is it? Is it about the, you know, the Hall of Fame votes that are going on? Is it about, you know, that he's got a job in the Major League Baseball? But the other one is that he continually says, no matter how he's asked, is that he's always been a home run hitter, and that steroids did not enable him to hit more home runs. And several commentators have asked, you know, have commented on this, saying that it appears that he has actually convinced himself of that. He believes it. You know, that's unfortunately where a lot of this stuff comes, is people, they are convinced that they are right, somebody else is wrong, and that's all there is to it. And it ends up in this. So this passage puts it right back on you to say, where is this coming from? And just think how much would be dealt with in the church if, when there were conflicts, if each and every person really looked at this and tried to deal with it from what this is actually saying here. There's two reasons stated about this. He says, you know, he said, you lust and you're envious, and therefore you murder and you, you know, fight. He says, you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, so that you may spend it on your pleasures. The wrong motives here would be in the sense of, you know, badly, to be ill, in the moral sense, wrong or wicked. So that's what it's really looking here, in that moral sense of that they're wicked, they're wrong motives, they're, you know, what we saw earlier about the wisdom, it's coming from selfish ambition. One writer says, their petitions were motivated by a mean and unacceptable desire. There's that sense of, you ask, you know, you're in this situation, you don't have because you don't ask, or you're asking, but the very way you're asking is so unattractive that God doesn't want to hear it. I find the Psalms a real challenge in this regard. I mean, you know, how is it that David is able to pray for the demise of certain people? But there seems to be a real clear parallel in Scripture at that time. We look at the time period, that the ones he's praying, you know, the ones that are attacking are definitely in the wrong, and they're violating God's expressed will. And so that, you know, that's a real challenge. I mean, it's, I remember a friend of Robin's told her once about how they were, I don't exactly know what the context was where that came up, but she ended up saying, you know, basically, you know, people that you know, bugged her or whatever, that, you know, she tried to be nice to them so that, how's the verse go, you know, heaping coals would fall. Well, you know, I don't think it works that way. You know, it's, I'm going to try to be nice to you. I'm going to pretend to be nice to you so you'll feel good. That's not, you know, that's not what it's saying. There's a hypocrisy there when we approach it that way. And you start to see that how we can do that. There's, you know, a wrong desire. You know, and I don't want, you know, just to read into other people's, you know, prayers or something. That, you know, I don't want to be critical in that regard, because, you know, I don't know what their motivation is, and you don't want to, you know, that regard, you know, to say, well, it was wrong. But you look at some things and you realize, you know, if you would really think about it, well, you know, how does that work? Remember this, this has been a long time ago, but a quarterback had thrown a, you know, the winning pass in a, must have been a college game. And afterwards he was saying, you know, as he was rolling out and getting ready to, you know, it's all he was thinking is, I can do anything through Christ who strengthens me. And, I mean, it's great that he has the apparent relationship with Christ there. And you know, so that's positive. But you sit there and you go, well, what if the defensive back is over there saying the same thing? I mean, how does that work? And I remember a long time ago, I mean, you can tell by the dating a long time ago, but it was, how does God decide, somebody's going, how does God decide if Tom Landry, you know, the Cowboys there, and it was when the Cowboys in Pittsburgh, and Bradshaw, who at that time at least was acknowledging, you don't hear that much anymore, but at that time was, very outspoken, he was a Christian. When they're playing, how does God decide who's going to win? You know, well, on one hand, I don't really know how God does that. But on the other hand, I think the major issue is, I don't think that's really a big concern to God. But you know, I mean, when you look at it, it's really easy to get your theology isolated where you're the only one that's there. Now, one of the neat things with my girls' basketball team is they have decided to pray before games. And it's, you know, one of the girls said this, and you know, and they do that. And that girl wasn't there last night or Monday night when we played because she's sick. But you know, the girls prayed, and it's so hard to hear, you know, what's being said, you know, because I'm not, you know, getting way down in there in their little huddle anyway. But there's so much noise, and. But, you know, I know that not part of the prayer was, and, you know, and that we'd win. Well, I don't know that it's wrong to pray that you are going to win. I don't know that that's, quote, the right prayer. But once again, if both people's sides are praying, you know, are we going to win, you know, there's something there. Now, can you pray that you're going to win with a certain attitude? I think so. But you can see that those kinds of prayers could also very easily fall into this sense of wrong desires, you know, almost in this genie sense of how you're going to use God. Yeah, and you have to wonder with a lot. Yeah, in prose, you have to wonder a lot is, you know, would they ever do that if they weren't on TV? I mean, I'm very convinced that a lot of those, it's just simply for the publicity. But that's another issue. That's my opinion.
God doesn't have a problem finding to decide whether or not the Steelers or the Cowboys should be. Because God's not a football.
I think that was covered right there too. Let's see.
Well, that also explains why there's so many injuries in soccer.
I'm sure Blake Griffin would be glad to know your sentiments there. Okay, three rebukes are given here. So this is very good timing here. Three rebukes. Oh, David. I misread that. You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Well, you know, that just seems a little out of nowhere, doesn't it? So it is used, you know, literally of adultery. It's also used figuratively in a relationship of God's people, in that depicted in the spiritual relationship, and that's clearly used in Hosea and some other Old Testament passages. And so in the New Testament, we also see this picked up as in this, you know, infidelity with God. And so I don't think James here is talking about people, that are violating marital unions. But he's talking about, you know, how this violates, you know, this relationship with God here. It says, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? And so there's where the violation comes in, is that there became a friendship with the world, and, you know, that approaching, once again, everything from the horizontal of the gain horizontally, and how that works, and that the world in that sense, you know, just that system of humanity, that leaves God out. And secondly, it says, or do you think that the Scriptures speak to no purpose? And he gives the Scripture here. He jealously desires the Spirit which he has made to dwell in us. You know, once again, what is this relationship? God is calling us to himself. You know, life, you know, the temporal aspect of life, we get so focused on the horizontal, and I don't know how you don't. I mean, I know how you don't at certain periods, you know, for a weekend at a spiritual retreat, a week of a revival, various things. But there are so many things that pull you back into, you know, the horizontal aspects. And I was, when I was in college, when I became a believer, I got involved in the lay witness movement that was kind of big at that time. And remember that we were at a church in Amarillo, and I was going to school at Canyon, which is like 10 miles out of Amarillo. And we'd been there for the weekend, and on, I think it was that Sunday evening, the last service, some friends, guy that I'd been a roommate with, a couple of friends, they came over to this service, and they were trying to tell me about these exciting plays that went on in the football game that afternoon or the night before or something. And I just remember, it's like, who cares? You know, because, you know, there's that, the atmosphere there, you're so involved in this focus. And it'd be nice if we could stay that way in one sense. But life doesn't let us stay there in isolation. I mean, you know, somewhere about it is trying to take those attitudes and that way of thinking and put it in, because you're not always just going to have the niceties going on. People are going to get sick. There are going to be disruptions. There are going to be things that come in. And yet, where's God? He desires the Spirit which He made to dwell in us. Then 30 says, but He gives a greater grace. God gives a greater grace. Therefore, it says, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Proverbs 3:34 says, though He scoffs at the scoffers, yet He gives grace to the afflicted. And that's very possibly where this James is drawing this from. Proud here is the arrogant, the haughty, the proud. God is opposed to the arrogant, but He gives grace to the humble, the lowly in that regard. Some of the wording in the passages, we've gone through the New American Standard, but the NIV says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something, but don't get it. You kill and covet, but you cannot have what you want. You quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. You adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world is hatred toward God? Anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy to God. Or do you think Scripture says without reason that the Spirit He caused to live in us envies intensely? But He gives us more grace. That is why Scripture says God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. The Message, Eugene Peterson's paraphrase says, where do you think all these appalling wars and quarrels come from? Do you think they just happen? Think again. They come about because you want your own way. You fight for it deep inside yourselves. You lust for what you don't have and are willing to kill to get it. You want what isn't yours and will risk violence to get your hands on it. You wouldn't think of just asking God for it, would you? And why not? Because you know you'd be asking for what you have no right to. Your spoiled children, each wanting your own way. He's kind of getting excited, isn't he? You're cheating on God. If all you want is your own way, flirting with the world every chance you get, you end up enemies of God and His way. And do you suppose God doesn't care? The proverb has it that He is fiercely jealous lover. And what He gives in love is far better than anything else you'll find. It's common knowledge that God goes against the willful proud, but God gives grace to the willing humble. Well, we'll look at some more of this next week, but you know, starting to look at worldliness and where do we, how do we get involved in such worldliness? Well, it flows from us, and it has consequences. And then this passage, you know, continues to talk about it some more. But it has real impact, you know, in the church. And, well, thoughts, insights, questions?
So what do we do?
Come back next week.
Well, people, you know, conceding, well,
Well, I think in here, you know, I don't think there's any way we would think that James is talking about doctrine at this point. And so I think when we come in and talking about, you know, things that typically cause fights, because he's already, you know, said some things earlier about, you know, people, not everybody should be teaching and so forth. So I think James would, as the other apostles, be very clear that there's a doctrinal integrity that has to be upheld. But, you know, when you come down to the color of the carpet, you know, how do you decide? And let's say we decide we're going to vote on it. And whatever that vote is, it would just be wonderful if it was 100%. And, you know, we don't have anybody to blame when we all hate it. But, you know, but typically it wouldn't be that. You know, if you can look at decisions like that as, well, the group, the majority made, expressed their preference, and I didn't, you know, that wasn't my preference, but it's a preference as opposed to something that's right or wrong. And I think that those become big issues for me. You know, if you can make the distinction between whether something is an absolute or whether it's a preference, you're a long ways toward being able to deal with issues. We were in South Dakota. There was a kind of interesting for a couple of reasons, but one is, I don't know how much it has to do with it, but it just, I always find it intriguing. There was a guy that his daughter, you know, that lived, adult daughter that lived in another town, they were big supporters of this evangelist, the evangelistic team, and it partly through that influence, you know, was the reason they were invited to come to our church. And this was they were kind of a singing comedy thing they did, and, you know, use evangelism. And their main thing was to get into schools and do it. And this couple had been real big about getting them into schools where they lived. And so they come, and as they're there, the guy that's running all their kind of operation right before church and it's an evening service asked if they could set up a display, so they, you know, could sell their, you know, CDs and T-shirts and you know, and if I would have been wise, which I've unfortunately never have been, I would have said, here, let me get, you know, chairman of the deacons and, you know, get him involved, you know, to do it, and I would have walked away from it. But I said, no, I don't. Well, that's not a problem. Well, of course, you know, the other thing, if I'd have been wise, I'd have said, you know, explain to me what this would look like. Because I'm thinking, you know, we have these, the way our church was set up there, you know, these doors, and in between it had a built-in kind of track rack that, you know, this went all the way across, and you know, so there's a very obvious area that's very easy. You can put tables there, and we did that for various things. And I'm just like, you know, you got a couple of tables there, and you sell it. And all of a sudden, they're pulling out all this PCV pipe, and they've got the whole, you know, their whole display that's set up there, you know, hanging their T-shirts and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, and so it's very easy if, you know, if you're of the mindset, you're like, okay, this is what Jesus is talking about with the... Yeah. And so... You know, 10 minutes later, this guy says to me, you know, he says, I understand you gave permission. And I'm just like, yep, and kept going because, you know. Well, at the same time, we were trying to, you know, we knew we had definite conflict in the church. And we had been in contact with this peacekeepers organization, and the guy had been there for part. Meet with us. And so I took the initiative to meet with this guy. And there had been ongoing conflict. He, you know, he didn't like me. He pretty much told me that the first week, you know, because he was mad at the previous pastor and he would never be close to me because he was really close to the other pastor and the pastor left and couldn't get over that.
This was the peacekeeper guy?
No, this was, yeah, this is why we might have needed, probably would have been good to have peacekeepers on staff. But anyway, we met and had a kind of a moderator. You know, he wouldn't meet with me, you know, alone. Had other people, so had a, you know, another, you know, two other people there. And Darren asked him a question. He said, well, you know, because, I mean, it came up and talked about it a little bit and, would it been, you know, would this, you know, something like this, you know, if it was, you know, Sunday morning, would that have, you know, been different? Yeah, you know, Wednesday night would have been maybe acceptable. You know, things like that, you know, which it would have been. And, you know, so is this an absolute or preference? You know, is there a short, and, you know, sat there and you know, I mean, the answer is this is a preference. It's not necessarily a wrong preference, but it's a preference. He's not going to be able to go anywhere and say, this is why this shouldn't happen. I mean, the best place, the only pass he could really go to is be about, you know, Jesus driving him out. And that would be far-fetched to push it to this point. And so he says, it's a personal conviction. See, there's nothing you can do with that. You know, because, you know, I have to take my ground for personal convictions, you know. God's convicted me, you know, that type of a thing. But see, you shouldn't allow a person to make that statement unchallenged. Because it yeah, when, you know, see, it's very manipulative.
Or to buy stuff from the church. Which goes back to the thing, all church conflict can be solved with a large enough caliber handgun.
So, you know, there's a play, you know, when you come back. So I think, you know, a huge, you know, now are there things that involve right and wrong that are a part of conflict? Yes. And those should be dealt with based upon right or wrong. James isn't talking about that here. But the majority of conflict in church has to do with non-right or wrong issues. You know, people get their feelings hurt not so much because somebody was rude, but because they choose to get their feelings hurt. Now, I'm not saying that people don't get their feelings hurt because somebody's not rude, but sometimes people look for... There was a guy in Brenham that was had a really good relationship with this lady. You know, I mean, they were good friends and probably had a lot of similar personality things. And so Hal said something to Ann, and somebody else is standing there, and he listens to it, and he's offended. Ann's not offended, but he's offended. You know, I mean, that's just being overly sensitive. Now, if you're at a place where you're saying what you said is really wrong, even if Ann's not smart enough to realize that's an insult, that's different. But, you know, when you just jump into something and say... So, you know, I think those are the kind of areas. So when you come back and you were to evaluate that and you say, why are you so sensitive? Why are you... And, you know, it comes down... You know, is this because things aren't the way you want it? Because there's something else there. That same guy read Promise Keepers. I hadn't even heard of the book. First time I ever heard of the book. Didn't have a very positive view of it after this conversation. But he came in, explained this. And I'm like, uh-oh. Wow. I'm so impressed. I cannot believe this. After, you know, this conflict that's gone on for so long with him, being upset about any and everything, he's going to apologize. I'm just sitting there going, wow! And he goes, last year, when so-and-so happened, I was really offended. And, you know, after reading this book, I just need to come and confront you about that. I'm just like, I haven't read the book, but I think you missed something somewhere. And that's when I decided, not that I've ever tried it, but I decided there should be a statute of limitations, you know, in church. It's like, last year, wait, you mean I offended you a year ago? Nah, it's gone. You had your chance. It's only good for 6 months. Nah, you can't bring it up anymore. But, I mean, there's, and I'm not, you know, I'm obviously making light. I mean, there are serious issues that should be dealt with. And it doesn't matter how long it is, they should be dealt with. And doctrinal things are serious, and there's other things that are serious. But there's also a lot of what James is talking about. It's coming somewhere inside because of something that's not good. And if it was a simple thing, then it would be there. Early, when I was a pastor, I remember that I had a really good friend. It was, church, and we were always talking. He'd gone to seminary. So we talked a lot. And I remember telling Kyle one night, I said, man, the early church must have really been goofed up. I mean, look at all of these exhortations about getting along. I mean, it's just replete, over and over and over. And Kyle, kind of goes, well, do you ever think that maybe God included that because we needed it or something? I forgot where. And that's, I'd missed it. That was the point. I mean, this is the ongoing thing. So, you can't make it simplistic. But on the other hand, it is fairly simple, as James puts. Hey, you got quarrels? What's the source? Because you got some wicked ambition. And that's where he kind of puts it. And if we'd all sit back on those and deal with it and say, okay, is this really, what's really going on? I'm really upset because of this, or am I upset? Kind of like that guy was really honest. And that he was probably very honest with that the one time he talked to me when he said, I'm angry. I saw myself as very close to this pastor. I don't know if the pastor saw himself real close to this guy. I don't know. But he saw himself as very close to the pastor. The pastor left. He felt betrayed. And he would never be close to another pastor. There's something inside you that's not good. And it's going to project out and cause problems. Yeah.
That guy's getting too close.
I don't know. So that's what he's saying here at some level. Now, yes. But, I think when Scripture definitely goes there, the applications go there of how we can take it out. The difference at some level is that, as he's talking about the Spirit here, potentially within the church, you got the Spirit in everyone, and when you go to the workplace, you don't necessarily have that. But the part on, as it relates to you relating, yes, it's exactly the same. And even within the churches, that way, you're still at that point of, I can only be at peace with other people to the degree they allow me to be. Now, all that sets us up for being self-righteous and falling right back into this, I'm so, I'm so perfect that, and so you always have to be coming back and dealing with this. Well, it could be that, or it could be that we're just all so pathetic, nobody would believe it. It's so obvious we're not spiritual. No, can't even try to go there. Huh? If you want a starting place, this is the one. We've been trying to start. We've been going through first year spirituality for 50 years now. Okay. Prayer requests.